This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
Hi, I'm Cal from Santa Cruz, California. I have just finished my last final for winter quarter at UC Santa Cruz. This podcast was recorded at
1:35 p.m. on Thursday, March 21st.
Things may have changed by the time you hear it, but I will be enjoying my spring break as much as I can before it all starts up again next quarter. Okay, here's the show, and go banana slugs!
Banana slugs. Now that is a mascot I've never heard of before. Hey there, it's the NPR Politics Podcast. I'm Susan Davis. I cover politics.
And I'm Ximena Bustillo, and I also cover politics.
And NPR's Jasmine Garz covers immigration, and she joins us today. Hey there.
Hi.
So today on the podcast, we're going to be talking about immigration law and immigration politics. And Jasmine, I'm sure our listeners have seen a slew of confusing headlines about a new Texas law, often shorthanded as SB4, that allows local police to arrest people they suspect of entering the country illegally. Let's start with this. What is this law supposed to do?
Sure. So this particular law is about people coming into the country undocumented, crossing into Texas undocumented. And what it's supposed to do is it gives local and state law enforcement, you know, state troopers, police, sheriffs, the power to arrest someone based on the suspicion that they are an undocumented immigrant that has crossed into Texas. It also, importantly, gives Texas judges the power to take an undocumented person to a port of entry and send them back to Mexico, even if that person is not from Mexico.
Oh, wow. But where does it stand right now in the courts?
So this week, the Supreme Court gave Texas the green light to go ahead and start enforcing this law. A few hours later, a federal court of appeals said, hold it right there. We want to hear arguments about this. So the law is on hold. The law is not in effect. And this court of appeals, they heard arguments on Wednesday.
Do you know what the sense is from law enforcement groups in Texas of whether they have been endorsing or opposing this law?
It's a mixed bag. You have, for example, the police in Houston. I mean, they've indicated that they don't like this law and that it's going to cause like an environment of mistrust in this community that they're supposed to serve. Mm. And I think, you know, one of the big concerns from people who are against this law is racial profiling.
Yeah.
How are you going to be able to tell who looks like they are an undocumented immigrant who just crossed, which that's over and over the challenge we've seen.
And I'm glad you brought that up because, Ximena, you're reporting from Arizona, and this is a state that has a history with laws very similar to this one, and it still seems to cast a long shadow in the politics of that state.
It definitely does. So Arizona had SB 1070 in 2010, and it really does mirror SB 4 in Texas right now. It was called the Show Me Your Papers Law, and it empowered local law enforcement to ask, you know, those suspected of being migrants or undocumented migrants for their documentation during things like routine traffic stops. And so same as in Texas, it led to concerns that, well, what does this suspicion look like? It's going to be racial profiling. And so that created a lot of fear amongst the immigrant community, regardless of their status, right? Fear of driving, being out of the house, being stopped, and you happen to not have your papers, or what if you actually are undocumented? So there are definitely a lot of emotional and economic impacts felt from those communities, people that left the area, people that were just genuinely very afraid during the time that this bill was looking to become law.
It is interesting because you can see the conflict here of why having a patchwork of state laws conflicts with federal immigration law, and this fight between the states and the federal government right now is playing out all over the country. Jasmine, I know that you've also done reporting in Florida that has also passed more aggressive immigration laws in recent years.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was in Florida recently and looking into the impact of one of the most aggressive immigration laws in the country. the law basically cracks down on employers who use undocumented labor. It also prohibits undocumented people from having a driver's license. You know, what's really interesting with Florida is the economic impact. I think that's really fascinating. I went to immigrant communities throughout Florida who most people told me they estimate about 30% of undocumented people left in Florida, and they wow. headed north.
Since when?
Since the law was passed close to a year ago. You know, every single industry I spoke to, whether it was roofing, whether it was hoteliers, restaurants, farms especially, told me we've been really impacted by this. And that's something that just really fascinates me, right? I mean, I think there's like a political line of thinking here. And then there's like an economic line of thinking about, you know, labor shortages in the U.S., and they're not always aligned.
I'm curious, in both of your field reporting, I mean, Texas, Arizona, Florida, these are all states with significant Latino populations, significant Latino voting populations, but this issue doesn't sort of cut cleanly politically. I wonder what you have heard from them.
I mean, it doesn't cut cleanly in part because of some of that economic sense, right? You know, you have these local businesses, you have these industries that, you know, are family businesses or do rely on undocumented labor, historically have. And so it doesn't cut cleanly politically. It doesn't cut cleanly at the personal level either, because it's people's jobs, it's people's livelihoods. And so I think that's what makes the issues really interesting and also very complicated.
Jasmine, when you talk to people about sort of these mass deportations and this idea that has certainly taken hold within the Republican Party, how much support do you think it has among the people you talk to?
Okay, like, let me give you an example, right? I went to Fort Myers recently in Florida, and I was working in a neighborhood that's largely immigrant, where I know there's a substantial amount of undocumented immigrants. And all of a sudden, I'm in the parking lot, and it's a very Hispanic neighborhood. And I see this white car covered, completely covered in Trump 2024 Make America Great Again decals. The car belongs to the ice cream shop owner, who's an immigrant himself from Switzerland. His name is Thomas Howitter. And I asked him, you know, you're obviously really passionate about this candidate, and the centerpiece of his platform is he's going to deport a chunk of your customers.
I don't know how that's going to be. You know, I mean, certainly criminals, people with a record, they need to go. I think the first thing is secure that border, and then let's decide what we're going to do with the people already all here. We need workers, we need people. I mean, to just deport millions of people is maybe a little bit of a problem.
But that is exactly what Trump is campaigning on, yeah.
No, I know. And I keep hearing it over and over again, which is, well, I don't think he's going to really do it. He's a big talker. And also, we can't do it because we really rely on that labor.
You know, I've heard a lot of that in Arizona, too. And there are folks who do buy into the argument that the former president does say, and Republicans do say, where there is a right and a legal way to do things. And if they had to do that, others have to do it, too. And it's a very black and white situation.
All right, Jasmine, we're going to let you go. But thank you so much for your reporting. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll talk more on the presidential politics of all this when we get back.
Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Learning. IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy: family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy.
And we're back, and the inimitable Franco Ordonez is here. Thank you so much, Franco.
It's great to be here.
Obviously, we're talking about immigration, and it has been nearly 40 years since the federal government has overhauled the immigration system. This is an issue that Washington just can't seem to crack, no matter who's in power.
Yeah.
Franco, I'm going to give you the heavy responsibility of trying to articulate why has it been so difficult?
Man, I mean, I've been covering the White House, obviously, for a number of years now. But for a long time, I covered immigration, and there is no issue that I can think of, maybe gun control, gun safety, that has been so emotional, so divisive, just kind of wrenching for people emotionally and politically than immigration. I mean, it's just been a slog. I mean, both sides are just so divided on this issue. I mean, I think what's fascinating really is how the conversation has changed from back in 2013, when there was actually a chance of, you know, some type of large immigration package, when senators, the Gang of Eight, some of our listeners may remember, put together a package that included strong border enforcement, but also a path to citizenship, money for Border Patrol, a big package. And it passed the Senate, but didn't go beyond. But now it's completely different. I was actually talking with Leon Fresco. He was actually a staffer for Senator Chuck Schumer at the time. He was the guy at the keyboard who wrote the legislation. And I asked him, you know, what happened over in that time? And he talked about how in 2012, you had just had an election and Obama had just won, and Republicans were really having a, you know, come to Jesus moment, and thinking that they needed to have a bigger tent, and they thought they needed to attract more Latinos, and they felt this was the way.
Now that we're in 2024, 11 years later, there just is a sea change in that, A, people don't necessarily correlate anymore immigration and the Latino vote as being linked in any way, meaning whether you have Trump or whether you have Romney or whether you have McCain or whether you have anyone.
And he goes on to say that this is not about attracting Latinos through immigration or through this issue. And he said what they're doing more is actually raising or stoking their Republican base by warning that these immigrants or these migrants that you were talking with Jasmine and Jimena about that are coming over are actually potentially, this is the conspiracy theory, that they're coming over and they're recruiting them to be new Democratic voters.
There used to be much more of a middle on immigration, on what needed to get done, but the parties have moved further and further apart, almost like you said. The gun issue is as intractable as the gun issue. And I think in 2024, immigration is an issue where the policies of Joe Biden and Donald Trump are starkly different, not just in the policy, but frankly, with the rhetoric.
Absolutely, with the rhetoric. I mean, Biden came into office promising a more humane policy. He came in, got rid of funding for the border wall, promised that there would never be another inch of border wall built. He backed off on that a little bit, I will note.
He's backed off on a lot of things.
A lot of things. He ended the travel ban. He introduced legislation that would provide a path to citizenship. Obviously, Trump is kind of the extreme opposite, talking about wants to, you know, in 2024, part of his campaign, like it was before, is to build a wall, to do another travel ban, to mass deportation, as you guys were talking about earlier. I will say, though, Biden has interestingly shifted in the last few months as the problems on the border have become more challenging. He has started to incorporate some of the language that some would say Trump's language, talking about shutting the border down, supporting legislation that senators, a bipartisan group of senators, tried to move forward that would have been some of the most extreme enforcement measures passed ever. But obviously that fell apart largely because Trump urged Republicans not to support it.
Jimena, what are you hearing in Arizona about the presidential election and the issue of immigration?
I mean, Arizona is in such a particular situation right now because it is the presidential swing state that is on the border. And it is, you know, kind of seeing the ripple effects of what's happening in other states along the border. So when Texas closes ports of entry, when Texas is not an appealing place for migrants to go, in part, that flow has been pushed west along the border to states like New Mexico and particularly Arizona. So that means two things. First, you do have more migrants coming in through ports of entry and through other parts along the Arizona border. But also second, you know, any sort of commercial traffic is also coming in through Arizona. And so there has been this sort of dual two-sided coin of how do you deal with the pressures of intake of a larger flow of migration, but also you are seeing this interesting economic benefit of just natural cross-border international trade coming through your state. Franco mentioned kind of the language of shut the border. One thing that I think is really interesting is that in some areas, you know, for folks who have supported the former president for a really long time, you know, they echo that as well. They want to shut the border. They want to close the border. And that's the language that's used. I just spent some time in some more rural, smaller border towns here along the U.S.-Mexico border in Arizona. Even people who do support the former president and do lean Republican, they say that the language of closing and shutting the border is actually really scary to them because that means no cross-border trade. That means that the natural relationship between Mexico and U.S. border towns where people cross every day for work, to go on dates, to have dinner, to shop, that won't happen. And that devastates local economies, rural local economies on the ground.
I'm glad you brought that up. And Jasmine referenced it in the beginning because to me, I think that when you look at poll after poll after poll in this cycle, and they say, what do you care about? Voters say they care about the economy and they care about immigration. They're regularly listed as top issues. But I almost think you can't separate those two. Immigration, sure, it's a cultural issue, but it is also very much an economic issue. And this seems to be one issue where more acutely with the Republican Party, their immigration position runs counter to the idea that they can grow the economy, because it's if you want to mass deport immigrants who are a vital part of the American workforce, but you want to grow the economy, those are two policies that run counter to each other.
They do run counter to each other. And there's a really good example of this in that the federal mandate from the federal government came down to close the Lukeville port here in Arizona in December. And that was an immediate reminder to Arizonans across the state of the impacts of border politics federally impacting their lives. When that port closed, you know, that really impacted cross-border traffic. There were people that wanted to do holiday shopping that were not allowed to. People, you know, middle-class suburban families in Maricopa County, which is the swing county, that want to go to Mexico because it's cheaper to have a vacation there than it is to go to California over in San Diego, that they were not able to do that and their holiday plans were immediately affected. And so there really is just this immediate reminder of, you know, what the orders from the top down, from the federal government down to these communities, you know, even if it's Phoenix, which is not a border community, how that is affected.
I think it's safe to say that immigration is not going to be solved before the 2024 presidential election. I don't make predictions, but that one's a pretty safe one.
I think that's a pretty safe one.
But it does make you wonder if this has reached a boiling point of an issue, that whoever wins this presidential election, that immigration is going to be an issue that the federal government is going to have to tackle soon.
I mean, it's a long overdue issue that the federal government is going to have to tackle. I think you're seeing signs now about how the direction of what that tackling may look like. If these issues continue and you still have Democratic governors and Democratic mayors, as they are now complaining to Biden, that something needs to be done on an enforcement side. I think you are going to see some of those things.
Over 50% of farm workers are undocumented, and no one disputes that fact. And the only other viable alternative is agriculture visas that are just really expensive. And farmers constantly tell me that labor is one of the biggest costs that they have. That contributes to higher food prices and higher food costs, which any voter you talk to will say is one of their top concerns.
Yeah, that is very interesting.
All right, let's leave it there for today. I'm Susan Davis. I cover politics.
I'm Ximena Bustillo, and I also cover politics.
And I'm Frank Ordonez. I cover the White House.
And thanks for listening to the NPR Politics Podcast.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me. And I'm not changing it for anyone. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on Black experiences. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.